And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Certainly we have a lot to discuss based on what happened last night as the Browns beat the Giants 10-6 in preseason game number two. Paul and I will talk about some of the standout players, some of the areas of improvement on multiple facets of this team. But let's start, obviously, with the injury news, Paul, because I think that is by far the biggest storyline. So here is the latest with respect to the injuries. I'm going to go through. There's four notable injuries. Odell Beckham, I'm sure many of you are aware from watching the game, he left in the first half. He walked off under his own power. He was tested for a concussion. He was cleared for that. X-rays came back negative in terms of his ankle injury. They're classifying it as a sprained ankle, and he will undergo further tests today. Michael Hunter suffered a concussion. He also left the game. Also at the wide receiver position, Brandon Marshall is getting x-rays on his shoulder. We have no update in terms of what those x-rays showed, but he was quoted based on reporters that spoke to him in the locker room that his shoulder is sore, and then Tavares King re-aggravated the ankle injury that kept him out of that first preseason game. So this is not necessarily the news that the Giants anticipated coming out of preseason game number two, Paul, because regardless of what happens from an X's and O's standpoint, priority number one is you just want to come out of a game 100%.
Yes, and that's why this is really concerning right now, because you have guys who you just don't know a lot about. When you're talking about a recurrence of an ankle injury with Tavares King, who knows? Is that going to be worse than it was the first time or not worse? You just don't know. And it's the fear of the unknown right now that is probably stressing out most people in this situation, because we don't know anything dastardly up. We don't know anything dangerous up. Look, Sterling Shepard, originally it was perceived that was going to be a really bad sprained, bruised ankle. And it turned out he missed one game. Well, you know what? Odell Beckham has a sprained ankle. Maybe it turns out he misses one game. Maybe that's all it is. It's the fear of the unknown right now.
Speculation, basically.
That's what's got people all upset and up in arms. So, yes, in one way, you're right. They'd be a lot more comfortable if they didn't have to deal with this list of things to look at. At the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that any of these things are going to dramatically affect this club once opening day runs around in Dallas. I will say this. The concussion to Michael Hunter, that does bother me a little bit more than the others. And the reason is twofold. First of all, concussions really don't have any timetable. A lot of other injuries, you can kind of put some kind of clock on them. Concussions, you can never put a clock on. Ever. Ever. Guy gets a concussion, he could be back in 3 or 4 days or a week. That guy gets a concussion, he could be out 2 to 4 weeks.
It varies.
That guy over there gets a concussion, he might be out for 8 weeks. You have no idea about the timetable for a concussion. So, for that reason, number one, I'm concerned about that one a little bit more. Number two, it comes at a position where the Giants are extremely thin. Very, very, very thin. This is a corner who really did a lot during the offseason, has had a good camp so far. They think he's one of their top five corners on the team. In fact, he got the start last night with Eli Apple being out himself. So, yeah. That one does concern me a little bit more than the others, to be perfectly honest with you, for those two reasons. And then, of course, you still have to worry about the fact that Keenan Robinson is in concussion protocol for the second time this training camp. And he is a huge, can I say this again, huge part of their sub-package. It is what it is.
And also you need to take into consideration very quick turnaround, because the Giants play their third preseason game Saturday, and they're not going to practice much this week because of the short week. But with that being said, and I'm with you in terms of the concern, especially because of the role that Hunter could potentially play as that fourth corner, It is, though, an opportunity now for some of the other guys to get additional reps in all likelihood Saturday. From the cornerback perspective, Dante Dion, who had an interception that was nullified as a result of a penalty.
Great play.
Continues to hustle, so you figure he's in the mix. Valentino Blake is also very well in the mix. And then on the receiver side, Paul, Travis Rudolph, who I think also looked quite well last night, he's going to get additional reps, as will probably Roger Lewis. And Darius Powell, if I'm Darius Powell right now, who missed the game last night, I'd be itching to do everything possible, Paul, in all seriousness. Because think about this. If they're without Marshall, Beckham, and King on Saturday, who better to want to be on the field than Darius Powell?
Well, Roger Lewis, too.
Well, of course, who I mentioned. But Powell, too, is on the practice squad and has had a very good training camp.
You know, Powell's been nursing himself a lower, I believe it's an ankle injury, is it not? Or was it a hamstring?
I think it's a hamstring for Powell.
And he's been on the bike now for about a week or so. And so there's no question he has not helped his chances by being out of commission at practice. But you make a great point now because availability is a big key moving forward. You know, Rudolph had a drop last night. He had a fumble ripped out of his hands on a kickoff return against Pittsburgh.
That was the first game, yeah.
So he's had one glaring minus in each of the first two preseason games. Now, having said that, he has had a terrific training camp. He handled everything else cleanly in the Pittsburgh game outside of that kickoff return. Last night, I think he caught two passes.
I'll bring up the box score. I know he had a nice catch over the middle last night. See if he had more than that.
But he did have a drop also.
Had one.
Again, you know, his old
two catches for 16.
I thought so.
Yeah.
So his report card right now is a little bit soiled. It's not as clean as you'd want it to be, especially if you're trying to make the team as an undrafted rookie free agent. He's got a few specks on that report card. Still has two games, though, to clean it up. Roger Lewis, we know he has been inconsistent during the course of this summer. So he's got two games now to really clean things up and see what he can do about challenging for a job. So I agree with you in that regard. Those two receivers probably have the most to gain right now with the other receivers being down.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. We're going to get to your phone calls and your tweets here in a second. All right, in terms of observations from the game overall, let's start at least with the good. The good to me, Paul, is the fact that this first-team defense seems to be picking up where it left off from last season. Three guys in particular, JPP and Olivier Vernon, complemented each other, I thought, very nicely last night. JPP had the interception. Vernon and JPP shared the sack, got a lot of pressure. And I think every single
Vernon
rep
tipped the pick, too.
Correct. That set up the interception. And then it seems as if every single game and every additional snap and every additional rep that B.J. Goodson gets, he seems to be looking more and more like a polished veteran who has easily made the transition after only having 13 defensive snaps last season.
Could not agree with you more, Lance. He is making monumental steps forward with each and every week. I thought he did okay against Pittsburgh. Of course, you know, that was his first game action of the summer after the limited time we saw last year. And I was like, okay, you know, I was optimistic, modestly hopeful. I saw a lot more last night. How about that sack?
Yeah.
Another sack. That's two and two games. And he's flying around. I mean, I see no hesitation on him. He is playing with a lot of assertiveness and confidence. And to me, that's the most important thing that he could do right now. Because even if you make a mistake, at least show everybody that you're going after it. Because if you hesitate, if you're passive, if you're afraid to make a mistake, and you play that way, other teams will sniff that out like a shark looking for blood in the water. And they will take advantage of you and keep going back to that well until they bleed you dry. You cannot, in his position, especially at middle linebacker, you cannot play scared. He's not doing that at all. So I'm with you 1,000% on B.J. Goodson. I will also say I thought it was really interesting and perhaps very telling that the Giants had Dominic Rogers-Cromartie playing safety last night with the first unit, trying to get him some reps out there to see if maybe that can help alter the equation for them in terms of how many defensive backs they keep. And if they can cheat, if DRC can wind up playing in both spots, you know, if he can play outside corner, slot corner, and free safety.
Versatile.
Holy smokes. You know, that's what Antrell Roll did. if you remember.
Yeah, they put him in the slot at times.
You know, he played all three spots at times. Started as a corner when he got to the Cardinals out of the draft. So that I thought was very interesting and a very huge positive for the Giants. I thought Calvin Munson showed himself very well. I thought Eric Flowers had a good game. Yes, guys, Eric Flowers had a good game. Let's make that clear. Go from there.
Well, you just transitioned to offense, so let's real quickly go over that before we get back to the phone lines. First of all, you can't just focus on one offensive lineman. I agree with you. I think if you're going to look at the overall performance of the offense, you have to take into consideration everything. And yes, we're talking about 6 field goals over the course of 2 games. We're talking about the lack of lengthy drives being put together. And once again, Paul, ups and downs in terms of the running game. For example, Paul Perkins gets a 16-yard run, and then there's a play where they lose 2 yards. Mm-hmm. And then there's another play where Orleans Darkwa had a hole, and unfortunately Evan Engram fell, and Darkwa ran into him, and they didn't get much production there. So, you know, you're getting some flashes, but once again, it's bits and pieces.
Yeah, look, the linemen will tell you all the time, on any given play, if one guy makes a mistake, the whole line's going to pay for it, and the play's going to blow up. And that's just the way it's working right now for the Giants. And they've got a couple more weeks to go. They've got to get it fixed. Whether or not they want to tinker, you know, do you want to try to get Fluker in there? Do you want to see if he can help out that right side a little bit? Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. I don't know. What I will say is this, and I said it to you last week. I think I said it to John. They have trouble with 3-4s, okay? That's a fact. And we saw a lot of 3-4 out of the Browns last night.
Well, because Greg Williams, their defensive coordinator, likes to mix things up. And he likes to pressure a lot, too.
Yes, he does. And so they did have a lot of issues. And it was disappointing. There's no other way to say it. It was disappointing. But I spent a tremendous amount of time during that first half while I was watching that game of just focusing on Eric Flowers. And yes, at the end of the first half, he did get bull rushed, did lose some of his ground, and then quarterback ran into the sack.
Now, the one that Geno ran into, your
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Now, I'm giving him a negative for that play. All right? On my grading sheet, Eric Flowers got a negative for that play, and it was a sack. It did not necessarily have to be. I think that Geno could have not run into the sack. I think he could have gotten rid of the ball as well, and allowed his tackle not to get hit with the credit for a sack. But I will tell you, as I looked at that first half, the fact is Eric Flowers, and I graded every one of his plays, maybe got beat, if you want to be a little generous, only 2 other times the entire first half. He played well, and that's fact. And so don't even bother calling me up to ask me about him, because I'm telling you right now, he played well, probably played the best of any offensive lineman did last night.
Now, the sack that went against Eli was off a stunt that they ran, and they ran that off of John Jerry because they were doubling the guy on the outside, and there was an opening inside, and that's how Eli got sacked.
Disappointing, because John Jerry has been an above-average pass protector during his time with the Giants. That's been his strength, and he whiffed.
All right, well, a lot to certainly delve into. I'm sure a number of you on the phone lines are foaming at the mouth to break down what occurred last night. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat.
One more thing.
Sure.
Aldrick Rosas, 47-yard line drive, drilled it.
And Mike Nugent hit his lone field goal attempt, too. So
they're
both
only
38.
38-yarder. So, you know, Rosas now has hit 52 and 47 in back-to-back weeks. And I did think it was interesting, Rex Ryan wound up doing part of the broadcast last night.
Correct.
And he had indicated, or I think it was him or Sean McDonough, might have been McDonough who indicated that Coach McAdoo had said if the kicking race was even, they would prefer to go with the younger guy. We had not heard that from Coach McAdoo in any of our press briefings, but that was relayed on the telecast last night. And obviously, to this point, Rosas has done nothing wrong.
And Rosas has been with the team longer, going back to January, so they've had a time to monitor him over the course of time, but we always needed to say we needed to wait to see what he does during a game, Paul, to determine whether or not things are translating. And I think that he's gotten check marks in that department because he's come through.
So far, the boxes are filled.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to sit here and critique him, and Nugent has come through too, but, you know, the whole point is you wanted to see how Rosas reacts in a game, and to get him an opportunity for a 52-yarder, to get him an opportunity for a 47-yarder, I think is really big from the coaching perspective, because you don't just want to give these guys chip shots. You want them to really be tested. If you have a game on the line or you have a late-game situation and it calls for needing a field goal to tie, you want to know you could throw him out there in that situation. Well, he's going to come through.
I'll tell you something else I liked about it. That kick last night was on real grass. Not the artificial turf. That was on real grass. And so not only that, you gave him a long kick now in a visiting stadium on real grass, unfamiliar territory. He handled it flawlessly. I know it doesn't seem like a lot, folks, but every single one of these variables that change can sometimes throw an inexperienced guy off. Nothing threw Rosas off last night. That's good.
One other note about special teams, and I'm glad you brought that up. I understand that right now it's sort of the experimentation phase because they don't know necessarily who's going to be on the special teams units because everybody's testing out whether or not they're going to make the roster. But, you know, coverage, I think, is an area that clearly has to be a focus entering the regular season, Paul. Once again, I understand there's going to be movable parts, but there have been a few big returns over the first two preseason games.
I know,
games.
But...
No, and I know what you're going to say. The personnel is going to change, and that's why I did mention that. But still, remember, that has also been sometimes an issue even going back to last season as well.
But by the time they're playing against Dallas in a few weeks, there may be four guys on the field who were on the field last night who were on that kick coverage team. So is it really worth even talking about?
I think it's worthy to bring up only because it is fair to say that there are going to be a number of young guys on special teams this year.
Okay.
There are. There's going to be, when you take into consideration this rookie class, and most of these guys are going to make the team, and then even the players to a certain degree from last year, or some of them now, like Paul Perkins and B.J. Goodson, who I'm not saying are going to be removed from special teams, but with more expanded roles, Paul, it's possible they cut back. And think about this. You know, Paul Perkins was actually a very good special teams player last year.
He was.
He made strides, so that's why I'm
so
bringing
that up. So was
Goodson. That's why I'm bringing that up. That, okay. I think, you can't overlook.
Okay.
Just some food for thought.
That's fair. And by the way, while we're talking about Perkins, we should just say, I thought Wayne Gallman ran well, but then coughed up the football.
Yeah. And that fumble, to me, was on him. I know it gets charged to Josh Johnson because technically it wasn't a clean possession, but he put it right in the breadbasket, and it fell right through.
I feel the same way. And on the topic of turnovers, and I'll just throw this one out there because I know the phone calls are lighting up, Geno Smith. I mean – I don't know. Coach McAdoo said flat out, you know, turnovers, they're poison. He takes them personal. How else can you take it? How many great passes do you have to throw before you undo it with a stick of dynamite by turning the ball over in the red zone?
And that was actually a really good drive that he put together.
A nice drive against Pittsburgh, too.
Yeah, I mean, they got all the way down the field. They put together, I think it was a 15-play drive, and then for it to end that way. When McAdoo spoke to the media after the game, Paul, when he was asked about Geno Smith's performance, he started off by saying the timeout in the fourth quarter and the interception were two things that he didn't like. Other than that, he said he played good. But he did highlight those two things.
How
before
could
he
you
said
not?
Anything else.
And that's – this is what I told you folks after the Pittsburgh game. To everybody who was so quick to say Geno should be the number two because Josh Johnson did not set any fireworks off, I understand that. But I said, all right, Geno Smith has three games. Let's see if he can play clean in those three games. Once again, the high risk, high reward. Geno Smith came back in game number two. That's a problem.
I'm interested to see, Paul, and I know we're going to have the rest of the week to talk about this, but they did switch because they want this competition to be fair. Josh Johnson came in first against Pittsburgh. Geno came in first now. I wonder now what the mindset is entering the third game. Eli's going to play. We know that. But remember, they wanted to see if they could maybe get Davis Webb in last night.
They didn't get him in.
So do they try now to get Webb in, and do they give Josh Johnson more reps because maybe they felt they saw enough of Geno in this game? That's just something to at least keep in mind here moving forward.
This is why Coach McAdoo said the other day, don't assume anything.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not happy with the two guys fighting for number two, Davis Webb has a chance to compete for that job. The clock's ticking.
But at the same time, do you feel comfortable, even though you've seen a lot of him in practice?
You don't want to. Perfect world, you don't want to.
Yeah.
Look at the way it's shaken out.
Well, listen, you don't keep a player for the sake of keeping a player, but at the same time, you also have to wonder when that backup is potentially a guy that hasn't played one NFL regular season snap, if you at least feel comfortable in him being your backup. Those are the two things that certainly going to have to weigh moving forward. All right, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Let's start the festivities. Victor is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Okay, good morning, Paul. And,
what's up, Vic?
Ranch, I'm very disappointed. I know it's still early in the second preseason game. However, I'm still bothered by the offensive line. I mean, I know you said Eric Flowers played well, and I have to agree with you to a certain extent, Paul, but Bobby Hart, he was nowhere to be found. And, you know, at this point, the way the offensive line is playing, you might as well have the defense do all the scoring because we're not going to do anything.
Vic, let me just say this, okay? Many coaches ago, Bill Parcells, and he was not the first one to say this, but it was the first one who I heard say it because that's when I started. He said, things are not as bad as they look, and they're never as good as they appear to be. And the fact of the matter is that the truth will lie somewhere in the middle. And while we look at these two preseason games, and obviously the offense has not been very productive, let's not kid ourselves, it has not been pretty. It has not been fun to watch when the Giants have had the ball. I totally understand your feelings, but that should not be enough to trigger the frustration that you're feeling right now. You got to try to hold your horses a little bit, Vic. That's all I can tell you. And if you want to flip it and try to make yourself feel better and you want to overreact to something, overreact to the defense because that first team defense looks great. So if you want to overreact, yes. Overreact with joy about how they look like they're going to shut people down.
They're awesome. I'll be the first one to say it. They're an awesome team as far as defense is concerned. But now all these injuries, they're bothering me a little bit. I'll tell you what, though. Next Saturday night when they play the Jets, that will tell the real story on how the season will run. Because every time they play the Jets, it's like a regular season game. Do you agree?
Well, that's the game where they play most of their guys for more snaps. So in that regard, functionally, it is the most like a regular season game that you're going to get. So I'm not going to disagree with you in that regard. But remember, the Jets are a 3-4 defense again. The Giants are playing all 3-4 defenses in the first four games, the first preseason games, if you will. They're not going to be playing a lot of 3-4 defenses during the season. So that is also something you have to take with a grain of salt.
Okay. Well, anyway, listen, I'm just disappointed. And I have to show my frustration, but I think they'll be fine eventually. So I thank you for taking my call. You guys have a great day, doing a fantastic job. And I'm sorry sometimes if I overreact.
You don't have to apologize, Vic. It's okay. Everybody does.
Vic, you're entitled to your opinion and you're entitled to your emotions. That's what's part of being a fan, and appreciate the phone.
We hope we can help you out, Vic. That's all.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Dave in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
How are you guys? You stole a lot of my thunder, which is great. I just wanted to comment on three people. The first one is DJ Goodson. Paul, you said it well. And the interesting part is going into the season, he was definitely one of the big questions as to, you know, what type of role he would play. If he turns into not just holding down the position, which I think last year that's kind of what we had, and the middle linebacker was a little bit more of an afterthought. I'm not trying to knock the guy, but if DJ doesn't just hold down the position but becomes somewhat of a playmaker and a difference maker, which I think he's showing signs that that's where his ceiling is, the ability of this defense to be not just good, but I put him in a category of being potentially special. Because, you know, you put him around everybody else. And I think that was a big question going into this preseason, and I think he's answering it, you know, very, very well.
Yeah, I think that he has transitioned quite well considering, like I said, he had limited reps last season. I think the guys respect him. I think they trust his instincts. I think they trust when he tells them to line up in a certain position. And I think it's very interesting that Spags is giving him the flexibility to come up to the line of scrimmage more often than not. Now, granted, it's the preseason, but remember, two of the sacks that he's had in the preseason have come as a result of him basically lining up as a defensive lineman. So the fact that he's been showing his versatility and they've been dropping him back in coverage a little bit, I think that really shows that the coaching staff has confidence that they can throw a variety of different things at him this early in the game.
Yep, I totally agree. The other comment is Paul, your comments about Ereck Flowers, and I couldn't agree with them more. And I know this may sound crazy, but for the long-term success of the team, I would almost say that let's just say we slipped last night a little bit, and let's just say that the offense scored a couple touchdowns and things were a little bit better and everyone was feeling better about ourselves. But Ereck Flowers had a terrible night and got manhandled, and but we were still able to kind of work around that. I would say that would have been a worse outcome for what the team needs going forward. And the coverage on Ereck, I've said this to you guys before, I just find it to be unbalanced right now in that even some of the other breakdowns of the game last night, not only, didn't give him – I kept reading for stuff because I thought he played, pretty well. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the comments were, things like, yeah, he did okay, but there was a number of times where his blocks were real high and his hands were up in the neck of it. And I just find it to be, crazy because, look, if it's a penalty, it's a penalty. He didn't get called for any penalties.
Correct.
And at the end of the day – the guy he was going up against is considered, he's obviously the first overall pick. You know his pedigree. You know how well he played in the first game. And I think that's a really good sign for this team. They've got to get some things straightened out on offense. I get it. But if you can say that Ereck Flowers isn't a weak spot and just plays, competitively, this offense has a chance when they get things worked out and they actually game plan and run plays that are productive. I think if he's not, a problem and he plays, the way he did last night and I think built off of the Pittsburgh game, so I think he's put, they like this talk about stacking good games on top of each other. I think he's, slowly stacking good experiences on top of each other. I think that goes a long way. And then the last one would just be this, let you guys comment on. I loved McAdoo's post-game press conference. He's, in his second year, he's really growing into a real, and I know this is a big name to put out there, but he reminded me a lot of Parcells and even a little bit of Coughlin. And I know those are big names and giant lore, and I get that. But more just attitude. He when they asked him about turnovers, and someone said, you take it personally, and he kind of paused, and he said, yeah, I take it personally. And even as he evaluated the players, I think he's got a strong relationship with the players. They talk about it that way. But then he's also got this kind of winning coach attitude, which is I'm demanding, and everybody's on my list from Eli to Odell to whoever I have to necessarily put pressure on. And I think that's a great, attitude, and a great next step for him. I'd love to get your guys' comment.
I'll make one very simple comment for you, and please do continue to listen here. Coach McAdoo is very, very demanding. Demanding of himself, demanding of every one of his players, and demanding of every single member of his staff. He is very, very demanding. That's the benefit, I suppose, of having such a young and energetic coach. Not that Tom Coughlin wasn't incredibly energetic because he was as demanding as anybody, okay? But you have a new voice here that came in last year when Coach McAdoo was promoted to be the head man. And I guarantee you part of his MO was, I've learned under some really good head coaches who've won a lot of games in this league, and if demanding is the way to do it, guess what? I can be as demanding as any of those guys can too. And that's the way I'm going to approach this deal. And that's what he's done. He's a guy who
He will definitely not show favorites. And let me just say this. Yeah, he takes mistakes and errors and laziness and sloppiness. He takes all that stuff personally. And he will hold everyone as much as himself with the same level of accountability. And that's why he comes off as he does after a game when he's not very happy.
Oh, yeah.
About things that did not go well, because it grates on him. Look, another 30 years down the road, if he still had coaching in the NFL, that may not be good for his health. But right now, I understand. It's only his second season. He's got a team that he is expecting to go far into the postseason, that many people are targeting as a Super Bowl contender. And it's his belief that, you know what? We have a right to expect this team to be so good. We have a right to demand that they're going to be so good. And if they do not show what they're supposed to show, I'm going to be angry about it. And I'm going to look at it as a slap in the face. You know what? That tells you how much he thinks of this football team. Because if he did not think this football team was a true contender, maybe he would not share those same feelings. Maybe he would be more like Todd Bowles, who knows his football team is way in over their heads, and he's just trying to get them to do whatever they can to be prideful and be professional, and let's go out there and just try to win as many games as we can. Let's try to get this football team ready. Well, you know what? Go, go, rah, rah. Let's go for it, baby. Let's do the best we can. Well, okay. You're going to be climbing uphill. Well, Coach McAdoo knows this team should not be climbing uphill. That's all.
Well, the last caller threw out the names of Bill Parcells and Tom Coughlin. I will say this. I'm not one to make comparisons, but I don't think it's a coincidence based on the fact that McAdoo did serve under Coughlin on his coaching staff, and you tend to be influenced by the people that you try to look at perhaps as somebody that you want to emulate if you are given the head coaching gig. And when I've seen Tom Coughlin conduct press conferences after tough losses, Paul, let's be honest, he's been short, sweet, and to the point, too, in terms of his answers
to the
media. And McAdoo, I think, takes on a similar approach. Now, you know, Coughlin had also that sarcastic tone, which I personally enjoyed.
So did I.
McAdoo has a little bit of that. I don't know if he's technically opened up, though, as much
as Coughlin. He's not as humorous.
No. Coughlin had a knack for the humor. And sometimes
he could crack a smile.
Yes. He knew how to – see, what Coughlin was so effective in is reporters would push his buttons, but he would love to return the favor.
Oh, yes.
That's what,
to me, is
extremely unique about Tom Coughlin.
Yes. And over the years, he got to be a master at it.
Oh, absolutely. He perfected his craft.
He really did.
He did it in the preseason, the regular season, you name it. That was his training camp. His training camp was to see what he could pull on the media. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mark is in Chi-Town. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to put a couple observations about the game, a couple of positives and a couple of negatives. B.J. Goodson, obviously, we talked about. I didn't see the fumble of Gallman, but I think overall he played a pretty good game, and I'd like to see him become more featured as we go into games 3 and 4. He sort of heard the footsteps on one of those passes, but I think overall he showed some creativity, some flexibility, you know, some different chops that he can bring to the game over Perkins. And the other guy I'd like to get a positive review about, or your comments, was I thought that DJ Fluker played pretty well from what I could see in the third quarter. I don't know if he played with the first team, but I thought he played pretty well. Might we see more of him with the first team next week?
Well, let's go in reverse. I certainly think that Fluker may have the opportunity to push John Jerry. Again, at what point does that happen? I'm not sure. The coaching staff will have to evaluate that, and maybe it does start to happen this week. I don't know. We have to talk to Coach Coughlin this afternoon. Coach McAdoo this afternoon.
We're talking about Coughlin. Yeah.
Talk to Coach McAdoo this afternoon to find out, you know, what his plans are there. We may not even know until they get out to practice on Wednesday again. But that's certainly something that you got to keep in the back of your mind, because Fluker was brought here in his mind with the intent to compete for a starting job. So that's certainly going to be in play. As far as Gallman, he dropped a pass in the flat, and then he had the fumble where he just didn't hold on to the grease pig down inside the red zone. Those are two really bad negatives. Other than that, yeah, you're right. When he had the ball in his hands, he ran very well. I would not deny that. But, you know, gotta hold it. That's, you know, those get marked on the report card, too.
You have to eliminate the mental mistakes, especially when you're a younger player, because you want the coaching staff to have confidence in you. I wouldn't jump the gun, Mark, to say that, you know, I think Wayne Gallman brings a lot more different things to the table than Paul Perkins. I mean, they did actually target Paul Perkins in the passing game last night a little bit, and we saw that even last season. And, you know, Perkins had, to me, one of the most impressive runs last night, which was that 16-yard run that actually Brett Ellison aided in terms of the blocking. So the thing is, when the blocking is effective and Perkins utilizes his vision, you know, he could do the things that you saw that Gallman did. And remember, Gallman wasn't also going up against the first team defense, in fairness. And I'm not trying to bring you back down to earth. I think Goldman's got upside, but I wouldn't jump the gun just because we saw a few flashes here that Gallman now should now get ahead of Perkins, get ahead of Vereen, get ahead of Darko on the depth chart, just because maybe he has some upside here and there.
I will say this. Yeah. I just looked up Wayne Gallman's college stats, and I had not specifically done this thing until just now. Gallman at Clemson had three fumbles in the 2015 into 16 season, you know, because they had a bowl game after New Year's. So that would have been last year. He did have three fumbles, did not have any the year before, according to the CBS Sports stats that I'm looking to. So he has not had trouble handling the ball, at least during his Clemson career. That's my point. That's why I'm taking a look at this now, because I did not like the way he handled the ball last night. I just didn't.
Yeah, and that was a clean handoff from Josh Johnson.
Right. Well, I think it's, you know, the second preseason game. I think it's worth, you know, seeing what we have. And we know what we have with Perkins, I think. I think it's worth seeing what we have with Gallman. On to the negatives. One, I thought Kerry Wynn really played poorly at right defensive end. I mean, he got suckered in on a play that ended up going around the left end for probably about 15 or 20 yards. And he played poorly on the next play, and I think they took him out after that. But that was one comment I made. And the other thing, I was very disappointed with Ben McAdoo when we got the ball back at the two-minute warning. And he took Eli out of the game, and we made no effort really to put an effective two-minute offense together. And I think it was a lost opportunity where, you know, we weren't having any very little success offensively. You know, things sort of open up in a two-minute offense, and how many times do you get to practice a two-minute offense? And it seems like, you know, what, do we have to wait to the first game of the season to actually get into that situation to see what we can do? I just thought it was a lost opportunity. So I'd like to hear your comments on that as well, and I'll listen offline.
All right, Mark, appreciate the
phone. Yeah, that may simply be they just don't want to show it right now. We know what they're doing here in practice. They go through two-minute offense every single day in practice, and they do it ad infinitum. I mean, they just pound it into these guys nonstop every single day. Whether or not they wanted to pull that out in a game, I can't say. I do want to say one thing. Fox Sports and CBS Sports don't agree. Fox Sports has Gallman with two fumbles last year and three fumbles the year before. FoxSports.com saying in his three-year career at Clemson, he had a total of five fumbles, just to clarify.
Well, I would try to find? See if maybe you could get Wayne Gallman's Clemson page. Usually the college tends to be on point. Maybe we could get at least clarification. I do, though, want to comment on the last comments that Mark threw out there. I'm looking up that two-minute drive just to see what he was talking about. When they did take Eli out, Geno Smith came in. So you're talking about there was a minute 10 left in the second quarter. They ran it with Shane Vereen twice. Geno Smith had a pass to Evan Engram for 6 yards prior to a timeout. And then keep in mind, they had second and two, at the 47, their own 47. So they're right near midfield. And that was the play that Geno Smith was sacked by Myles Garrett when Garrett was pursuing Eric Flowers, and then Geno Smith ran into the sacks. You know, they convert on that play. I'm not saying that they're going to put points on the board, but, you know, now maybe all of a sudden you're in Browns territory and you get a little bit more of an opportunity. There was also 26 seconds still left in the game at that point. Now you lose clock, you lose time, he's sacked. and you're only left with a third and long, very few opportunities there. And I don't know if they want to press the envelope heading into the half. So I think that sack, to be honest with you, I think that also changed the mindset of the possession down the stretch to determine exactly what they wanted to do. So that's something at least that I think that everybody needs to keep in mind.
My point is simply that they do work a ton on that two-minute offense during training camp. So whether or not they're going to do it in a game, I understand that you'd like to see it, but there's also a lot of stuff that they're not going to show in these preseason games. Let's not kid ourselves.
It is a bit vanilla. The other thing that I wanted to comment on.
By the way, Clemson stats on their official stat page, they do not list offensive
they
players'
fumbles.
They don't
list fumbles. Okay.
So Fox Sports says 5 in his three-year career. Okay.
Which is not an overwhelming number.
No, not at all.
So at least that provides some big picture perspective. The other thing was on Kerry Wynn perhaps not being as effective as he was in the first preseason game. I would say that I thought Wynn stood out more than Romeo Okwara in game one, Paul. And mm-hmm. I think Okwara stood out more than Kerry Wynn last night. That's how I took it away mm-hmm. in terms of the two preseason games.
I felt bad, though, for Romeo when he tried to bring down Kaiser.
Yeah.
On that
it was
play.
Close.
I mean, well, look, he did funnel him inside. And then the tackle was made only a yard or two downfield. But Romeo, man, he was like on roller skates trying to, you know, Kaiser's juking. And he's like, yeah. I got him. And no, I don't have him. And all right. But then they got him anyway.
And that's what happens when you go up against a mobile quarterback like that. Sometimes it's not necessarily
of course,
easy.
They played with each other at Notre Dame, so
that's
I'm
right.
Sure
there is
they,
some familiarity.
I'm sure they probably got a good laugh after that one was over.
Indeed. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Conrad in Manhattan. Conrad, what's happening?
Hey, great show this morning.
Thank you.
Wanted to touch on a couple things real quick. This was just a preseason game, so was there too much planning being involved, too much prepping for the game per se? So I'm not jumping over the bridge about this at all, but there are a couple things that I see that's concerning to me, where Bobby Hart and John Jerry, if you look at the plays when whether it be a running play where the running back wouldn't get a certain amount of yards or the play would get, you know, stopped by the defense, you always see them kind of looking up at their guy making the tackle. And this been for game one and game two. Eric Flowers, I think, had a pretty good game as well. So I'm not overly concerned about him. But those two guys, I think Fluker got to be able to come in and maybe get some reps with the first team and see what he got. What do you think about that, Paul?
Well, you know, I've been saying ever since the day they signed Fluker that I think he could compete for a starting job. And whether or not it's at right guard or right tackle, his mindset is, I'm going to win a starting job one way or the other, and he's going to go after it. So if the coaches give him a chance, trust me, he will go at it with 150% and will do everything he can to wrestle one of those guys out of the lineup. And there is no shortage of desire on DJ Fluker's part to do so. Trust me. This guy is hungry.
And one thing that I saw yesterday, that play, that deep seam, that deep route down with Marshall, the first play that Eli went to Marshall, I think he was rushed on that play. I think the protection kind of broke down. That's the reason why.
I'll be honest with you. I think if that's a regular season game, I think they probably make that pass work. I thought that Marshall may have been a little light in terms of going after the ball. I think he saw somebody coming, and I think in a preseason game, I'm one who believes, like Landon Collins does, that if you lighten up on the field, you run the risk of injury because it's a really dangerous place not to be balling out, and I understand why Landon Collins feels as he does. I also understand the flip side when you've been in the league for a lot of years. And, you know, you're over 30 years old, and you've proven everything you have to prove. Do you absolutely have to max out in a preseason play as if it was the Super Bowl? I understand why you wouldn't do that. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. You can see Marshall, he pulled up. He saw the hit coming as well. But one of the things, my last point that I wanted to add, that hit that, you know, that Odell took yesterday. I do understand by NFL standards, by rules, that it was not a legal hit. But I think that it was
It was a legal hit. Conrad. Yeah. I think you meant to say it was not illegal. Yes, it was a legal hit.
It was a good hit. Yeah. It was a legal hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. I understand by NFL rules that it is a legal hit, but I think that it was a dirty play. And you could see with that team yesterday, that defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, this was the guy that was, you know, the defensive
coordinator. I know what you're going to say. And the Saints, too. I know. And listen, I believe
when that year, when he was banned for an entire year, I think that was a life punishment. I think he should have never been allowed to coach in a league again. Because if you're going to go out there and tell your guys to purposely hurt somebody, to take them out and potentially take out their career, as a coach, the punishment should have been much severe. And yesterday, you could see the mentality of those guys was, okay, you know what? The rule is we're not going to hit him high, but you know what? The knees is totally okay. And that's dirty.
Well,
and I think that's coming from
Conrad,
that coach.
I mean, I'm going to step in here. I completely disagree with you because I think you also need to take into consideration the player. The player is Brian Body Calhoun, who was an undrafted rookie last year, who's trying to solidify a roster spot. I find it very difficult to believe that he had the mindset of hurting a player when he knows his job security is not 100%. Now, you could feel that way as a fan, and I get the dots you're connecting, but I don't think that he had the intent when he went low to hurt Odell Beckham, knowing that he's got a roster spot up for grabs. Guy's got to make plays.
And I'm going to go back to what I just said about 2 minutes ago in terms of being able to ball out and play 150%. I think his mindset right there is, I'm not going to let Odell Beckham make a highlight out of me tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that I chop him down, and I'm going to make sure my coaches saw that I made a stop and didn't give up any yak yardage to Odell Beckham Jr. so that it helps me win a roster spot. I don't think he thought, ooh, how can I hurt Odell Beckham Jr. on this play?
And his instincts were correct because Odell Beckham was still defined as a defenseless receiver. He did not establish himself as a runner. If Calhoun would have hit him in the helmet, that would have been a penalty.
Yes.
That would have been a legal hit. So his mindset was correct. I have to go low. Clearly, you don't want to hit him where, God forbid, he's going to suffer a season-ending injury. But you go low on a play like that because he hasn't established himself as a runner. And anything high is clearly going to expose you to a penalty.
Let's put it this way. If you're that player, and as Lance just said, he's a marginal player for a roster spot, and he starts thinking about what you want him to think about, and Beckham winds up getting another 8 yards after that catch, guess what? He may have just lowered his chances of making the team.
Bad film. Yeah.
Yeah. I could understand that. Maybe being a fan, that's what I'm looking at. But
I understand. I understand. Especially you're looking at it also from a Giant angle, and you're saying the Giants got a guy hurt, and it makes you feel bad. And I totally get that.
I just kind of feel like maybe he could have pulled up. I mean, you don't have to go high up. Maybe there's where you could hit him waist down, maybe, not all the way down to the knees. Maybe there's a way you could prevent him from continuing and making, you know, to continue to play. But I think that was just real close. I mean, that was really, really close.
Well, Conrad, I think if you go back and you look at the play and appreciate the phone call, from my interpretation, I actually thought he lost his footing as he was going after Beckham. And
Charles
maybe,
Woodson said the same thing
maybe,
on ESPN.
Yeah, maybe he was anticipating to hit him in the waist, but I think the fact that he lost his footing and he wanted to go low, that's why he obviously wind up hitting him in that knee area.
Put it this way, if I am his secondary coach or I am his defensive coordinator, I'm looking at that film this morning and I'm saying, hey, you know what? It was a good aggressive play. You get a positive for the play. You get a big plus on that play from me if I'm his defensive coach.
Yeah, I would have
and ultimately,
mindset.
isn't that what his goal is? And, again, I'm going to tell you, I can't promise you I know the player's intent because I can't. But I'm inclined to believe he had no injury thoughts in his mind about trying to do something bad to Odell. I think he just needed to make a play.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got John in South Carolina. John, what's happening? How we doing, John?
Right. I wanted to make two quick comments. Paul, you should play the lottery. I swear you should. You every time when Geno was driving down, between the 20 and 20, Geno Smith is your man. But as I was watching that play, I'm just worried about when is he going to make a mistake. And Paul, believe it, you hit it on the head. As soon as he gets down there, what he does, throw the interception.
I'm
like, Paul, you are absolutely right.
Look, every Jet fan who's watched Geno during his career in the NFL will tell you that happened to him more often than not. So this is not a matter of being a fortune teller, but what it is a matter of is that the quarterback has a lot of inconsistencies built into his game. And until those inconsistencies go away on the practice field, it's hard for me to imagine they're going to go away in a game. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. I hear you. And my second question was, it's not Eric Flowers. I know Charlie calls and raps. It's the whole offensive line. Pugh doesn't get a push. The whole line, it seems like nobody gets a push on that line. Nobody. You can't just blame Eric Flowers, and everybody else is okay. The whole entire line does not. And I was born in 66, so I love running the ball. You could have maybe not Earl Campbell, but anybody back here. When you get the ball and you got three people standing there on the defense right there, there's no way you're going to go.
John, you know what? Because you just said what you said, 66 you were born?
Yes.
Okay. So you remember when the Giants got Larry Zonka, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think we would all agree Larry Zonka – one of the top five fullbacks in the history of the National Football League. He's in the Hall of Fame. He was a brute force. He was an absolute beast, a monster, a workhorse if you've ever wanted a workhorse. I mean, the guy was a phenom in terms of his ability and his brute strength to smash that ball through the line. Larry Zonka got to the Giants. He played here for 3 years. He had one 100-yard game. And you know why? Because they had absolutely no run blocking for him at all. And if that didn't prove to anybody that it's not up to the back, it's up to the line. If Zonka couldn't run the ball here, then that told you nobody could run the ball here. Do you remember those days?
I'm sorry.
No, do you remember those days?
Yes, I do.
So
I remember those days.
I think every young Giants fan out there, you know, as over the last 5 years, as I have talked about the lack of run blocking on this offensive line, and basically every fan would crucify me when I wanted to draft offensive linemen. You know this, Lance. I'd always get yelled at. It's just hysterical to me how now everybody understands what I've been saying for years.
Flowers. It's the whole – even Pugh, the one that they praise is supposed to be in the Pro Bowl. Nobody can – get a push on a man. Nobody.
Well, John, as we mentioned earlier in the show, you had the sack off the stunt, which was on the right side, that had nothing to do with Eric Flowers.
Flowers had his man. Well, he ran right into him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have to be at least looking at the entire offensive line. There was also some pressure up the gut in terms of what Weston Richburg faced.
Yeah,
I forget who it was. There was a running play, Paul. I forget who was in, where they literally, by the time they handed it off to the running back, he was immediately tackled. I don't know if it was Perkins or Darkwa. I don't know if you remember the play. I think Eli was in the game.
Perkins.
Okay, by the time he got the ball, there were three defenders in the vicinity.
That's what I was just saying to Paul. Yeah. Unless you had Larry Zonka or Earl Campbell or somebody like that, there's nobody on the face of the green earth that's going to be able to beat three guys.
Trust me.
That
was my point. Not even Zonka could do something with that. Trust me.
And you could pick any of the other great running back in the NFL who would play behind that, would have their fair share of struggles.
The bottom line is this starting offensive line has been disappointing in the first two preseason games. That's a fact. No one's going to sugarcoat that for you, and no one's going to deny that. My point
is, Charlie better just get off of Flowers and just be when they're gonna keep him in, and when they're gonna make excuses for him, because they got to make excuses for the whole entire line should be revamped. If I was you, if I had another draft, I'd draft the first five offensive linemen straight down the floor.
Thank you, John.
Appreciate the phone call. Now, in fairness, though, on the topic of the draft, I mean, listen, Pugh and Richburg were drafted. I mean, we can't go with the narrative that, you know, this has been a position where they haven't focused on the draft.
No. They certainly started to do that as time went on, but they certainly could have done more as well. But, look, that's in the past. I don't want to discuss that right now. We have to discuss what they have and what can be done to the present-day situation to make it better. And they are of the belief, and I really understand why, during the offseason and during training camp, they are of the belief that the improvement will come from within. And besides, it wasn't like the marketplace was really going to help them this year. Okay? That's the thing, folks. And it's the one part about the game that can be extremely frustrating. Okay? We talk about this all the time. But in a need year, okay, if the free agent market and the draft market doesn't have what you need, if it doesn't match up, guess what? You have to suffer, and you just have to bite the bullet, and you have to wait until that carousel comes around again and the slot fits. This happens in the NBA all the time. How many teams, they badly need a point guard. They get the fourth pick in the draft, and there's only one good point guard in the draft, and that guy goes number two, and now they're screwed. This happens to the Knicks all the time, by the way.
What happens to a lot of other teams.
Think
as well.
About this, folks. The Knicks were one pick away from Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook in back-to-back years. Think about that.
That doesn't mean that they were necessarily going to take them.
They were going to take that guy.
That could be debated. You know, this is an organization that did take Frederick Weiss at one point.
In any event. Right. But that's the point. There was nothing that was going to inherently make this offensive line better available this year. Did you just see Garrett Bowles is getting hammered in Denver?
Well, rookies are great.
They're very unhappy with him right now.
Listen, having a young guy come in is exciting, but remember, it's all dependent on whether or not it translates to the field. And it's the same thing. You bring in a named free agent, that doesn't mean that player is going to deliver. So, you know, those are two different things. I want to squeeze in another call or two, so let's try to get an opportunity for Peter first in Cape Cod to weigh in. Peter, what's happening? How are we doing, Peter?
Little tough area up here to root for the Giants, but we're up here rooting.
Understandable.
When I lived in Boston, by the way, I'll give a shout out. It's a great group of Giant fans. They're right across from the Boston Garden. You walk in there and it's all blue on Sunday. So it's really, we're great fans up there. I wanted to give them a shout out. So I'll let you guys know we're rooting up here in Patriot Country.
Gotcha. So what do you got for us today?
I was talking about the offensive line a little bit too, but I don't want to over, you know, I'm worried about Hart and the other guy,
Jerry.
Jerry, right? Yeah. They seem to do well on pass, but very poor in running. I don't know if they could go to like a bit. Ellison looks like a good block. Maybe go to a two tight end, or maybe a fullback in front of Perkins to help. Maybe get some help to move.
Well, we saw move that in the first
defensive line back. You think something like that they might do eventually?
Well, they did use Shane Smith and Jacob Huseman in the first preseason game, so we'll see.
Less than that yesterday.
Yeah, not as much yesterday, so I think that was a noticeable difference. Red Ellison, I said, had the block on the Perkins 16-yard run, so we've seen what he can do. And
so did Flowers, by the way, on that run.
Yeah.
He had a really nice block on that play. I would add one other thing. I would add one other thing, and I want you to understand this, and again, a lot of people don't. A lot of times, what they will do in preseason games, not only is it vanilla, but a lot of times, that's the stuff that they're experimenting with. In other words, the stuff that they're going to want to use in their game plan, they're using at training camp. But the stuff that they're going to just experimenting with and saying, you know what, I don't know if we can do this or not, but let's just see if our guys can. And they're testing them with some of the plays they run in the preseason games. So the truth is, some of those plays, they're not sure they're going to work either. They actually want them to fail so that they can throw them out of the playbook. I know fans don't want to hear that. You want them to be good on every play. No. Some of the plays they run in the preseason, they're almost sure they're not going to work. But they need to go out there and say, okay, what are our limitations? We're not so sure we can run that play, so let's run it in a preseason game so we can make sure to throw it out of the playbook and we don't use it during the season. I know it's hard for people to chew on that, but there are plays like that in preseason games.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember a couple of years ago, I can't think of his name, that we had that fullback was like an animal block, and that seemed to help our running game a little bit. I forget his name right now.
Edgecock?
You're talking about Henry Ionoski,
right, right.
Or Madison Edgecock?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, maybe something like that, or, you know, just beef up the line, you know, and to augment, you know, the offensive line, and maybe we can get some movement, you know?
Well, like I said, it depends on, you know, how effective they think Shane Smith and Jacob Eusman can be and whether or not they warrant a roster spot. Because last year, we mentioned this time and time again, Will Johnson got hurt. He was expected to make the roster, and they decided they didn't have enough plays in the playbook to keep a fullback to replace him on the roster. So I don't know where the mindset is. And once again, we're looking at two preseason games where against the Steelers, the fullback was showcased. Last night, that wasn't necessarily the case. So you really have a small sample size to look at to determine whether or not how much they value that position.
Oh, okay.
All right,
yeah,
Peter.
Thank you. Great show, you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Bye.
So much for tuning in. Appreciate the phone call. All right, let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania to get the final word. What's happening, Joe?
Hey, just going on what you said in there. We ain't going to run these plays. Well, I agree, Paul. You know, last night with the offense, you know, like the Patriots, sometimes when we ain't running the ball, they're playing against a good defense team. Brady and them, their first 3-4 series, all they do is come out and throw the ball.
Yeah.
And we do have the players to do that, to set up the run and max protect and that. And then in last night's game, too, the defense, the few scores we gave up, there was a few key penalties that kept drives going that we did have them stop.
Yep.
Too, you know, and I'm looking. I think we'll be all right. We max protect. We plan. You know what I mean? What to do? The Jets game. I look like the same thing again. That they're going to play aggressive up front like that. And if we come out just trying to run the ball and handing it to Perkins in the backfield, and there's three guys on him right away. You know what I mean? Just forget it. You know. So. And as far as Geno Smith, that, you know, I'm not trying to cover up for him, but he did throw the ball there. There was a possibility that that receiver stopped his route there, too. So I don't want to jump it all on him. And to let it, maybe that other quarterback, our rookie one, to get a chance, possibly, if these guys don't show, to just go with our rookie, you know. Yeah, but Geno Smith's showing me something there, unless the rookie can whatever, because Johnson hasn't shown me anything yet. And then the other thing is our kickers. Remember a couple of years ago we did trade one there. I don't want to trade the young guy, but is there a possibility of, you know, holding on to him and trading the veteran we have? So that's just my comments on it. So thanks for taking my call, guys.
Hi, right, Joe. He's referring to Brandon McManus, who was traded to the Broncos right before they finalized
number seven.
The 53-man roster. Listen, that's always a possibility. I think it depends on what happens with the kicking situations across the rest of the league. But
you're not getting a pick for Nugent.
Yeah, well, no, I think he was referring to if they wound up saying they wanted to keep Nugent.
And trade Rosas.
Would they trade Rosas? That's what I think Joe was indicating.
I'd have a hard time doing that. Rosas, to me, has done nothing to lose the job.
I would agree with you. I think he's come through. And if he continues to do that, he's not giving them much ammunition to get rid of him. So if you're Rosas, every time your name is called, you hit the field goal in the game, you show that you're consistent in practice, make it very difficult for the coaching staff to
want to part ways with you. The way things are going, he may get called on a lot.
If they can't continue to punch it in. No touchdowns in the first two preseason games.
Right.
Something they want to change, certainly Saturday night against the Jets. All right, well, we appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets as well. Ben McAdoo will have a conference call later today where he will address the media, so stay tuned for that on Giants.com. And we will be back up and running tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, getting you set for the next preseason game as the team will resume practice for the next test. All right, for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.